You're listening to Met Radio 1280 AM CJTM, online at metradio.ca. I'm Kinza Zafar, with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. The Canadian Association of Black Lawyers, along with several other legal organizations, is raising serious concerns following the alleged assault, fining, and detention of criminal defense attorney Sudeen Riley inside an Oshawa courthouse. Riley, a petite black woman who wears a headscarf, was reportedly forcibly removed from an interview room. She had her headscarf taken off, was physically injured, and also detained in a cell in the basement of the courthouse in handcuffs on January 23rd. She further alleges that officers slammed her head onto a desk and put their knees on her back and her neck, all according to a statement made by her counsel. Images since released show Riley with a bleeding wound covering her cheek and her nose. According to files obtained by Toronto Star, Riley was issued a trespassing notice exactly 10 minutes after the court closed at 5 p.m., despite it not being unusual for lawyers to catch up on work after hours. Riley and her lawyer, Neha Chug, are contesting the charge, which is under the Trespass to Property Act. The SIU, which oversees police offenses, is not investigating this incident. They say it's because it doesn't classify as, quote, serious harm. The assault case has now been handed over to the York Regional Police from the Durham Regional Police. The police officers involved have been reassigned away from the court. 3 days after the incident, the Canadian Association of Black Lawyers, also known as CABLE, published a statement demanding a full, independent, and transparent investigation, accountability for all officers involved, as well as meaningful action to ensure that anti-Black racism and violence have no place in the halls of justice. I'm now joined by lawyer Carl Alphonse, the Director of Communications at CABLE.
First things first, could you confirm from a legal perspective that what happened to Sudeen Riley was assault causing bodily harm?
I can go into logistics of it because that's not my area of practice.
Yeah.
It seemed, I think there's lots of debate on what happened to her. I think in my opinion, I can speak for CABLE on that. I would say in my opinion is definitely bodily harm, as you can see, she was bleeding from what happened, right? Mm-hmm. From the pictures. I know the SIU they decided not to further continue on the case. I know from the description of this, right? Because the SIU only investigate things that are really that cause serious bodily harm. So they said in this situation, it wasn't that. And also, they could investigate sexual assault, but in that case, they raised her skirt. In my opinion, that's probably sexual.
Yeah.
But, obviously, I don't make the decision, and I'm also not a lawyer that practices in that area. So, I'll let the people who practices in that area make the determination. But I do know there's probably other investigation taking place. I know there's other remedies that the party involves are looking in. That doesn't require, that high threshold. But, whatever happened, it was an unfortunate situation, because if she wasn't black, that would have probably never happened.
Yeah.
And that's why it's unfortunate. But there's been outpouring support from everyone in the community, even people not in the legal community have been speaking up on the event. Law Society of Ontario, which is the society responsible for lawyers in Ontario, they made a statement.
Mm-hmm.
The Ontario Bar Association made a statement as well. And all of the different racialized legal associations made a statement to support the situation. It was great, because of all of the support that we got. In terms of what is being done, we're still following it closely to be seen, but I know all of those organizations, we support Sudeen mm-hmm. completely, on what happened. And it's the same thing at CABLE. We support her. She's a well-respected person, attorney on the defense bar,
mm-hmm.
We respect her, and I know she will get justice at the end of the day. Just only a matter of time. The truth will come out. The truth will always comes out, and she has good legal counsel on her case, and I know there's a lot of other lawyers that are there to assist pro bono as well. So, yeah. So yeah, she has lots of support, and she had the support of cable.
Yeah, thank you. I know that she was issued a trespass notice just 10 minutes after the courthouse closed. Is it common practice for lawyers to work at courthouses after they close? Like, have you ever heard of a lawyer being issued a trespass notice for working on the scene after hours?
You know, obviously, I can speak on cable from that, but you know, from my opinion, when there's anti-black racism, those officers always try to cover their tracks, and that's why they issue whatever they can to make sure that you know, like they can legitimize it. In my opinion, you know, like I think it's not something that has any legal basis, that trespass order. Whenever there's racism in a case, they always do try to justify it by something, right? So they're trying to give a trespass order, which is really broad, but we will see the truth, you know, in the processes that will take place.
You mentioned that the SIU refused to investigate the case. They say it's not serious harm enough for them to investigate. So the assault case has now been handed over from the Durham Police to the York Regional Police. And the
Yes.
officers who were involved in with the assault at the courthouse have been reassigned away from the courthouse. So I know that Cable is calling for a full and transparent investigation by an independent body. What could that look like?
Well, you know, like it seemed like that's exactly what they're doing, because it's not the exact police body that is investigating, but we want like an impartial body that could do like a full investigation, to look at it, you know, like from like a fair perspective. We don't want any bias in the investigation, and that's what we're asking for. In this case, you know, like it's not the same police body that was responsible for the harm that is looking at it. So you could say, you know, like it's an independent body, but it's still a police body that's looking at it, you know. But I think it's still better than having the same body look at it, right? So in this case, I think, yeah, I think it's still something. So we'll look to see what happens. But I do know, you know, that probably Sudin, she has really great representation, and she'll be looking at all the remedies that are available to her.
And what are some systemic safeguards that could prevent harm like this, especially in a system that historically has a track record of anti-Black racism and state-sanctioned violence?
Well, you know, the thing is, I think they should put like in the courthouse, you know, like I don't know how that happened. You know, I can only speculate based on what I'm seeing, but I think they should put, you know, like safeguards for lawyers, like especially racialized lawyers. You know, like I don't know if you're aware, but there's been other cases, not egregious to that case. That's the first time a lawyer has suffered harm or police. But you know, there's been cases. One of the first cases was a lawyer named Jason Bogle. And you know, I see him like that was probably in the, I would say, early 2010. And him, he was sitting in his luxury vehicle, like a Lexus. And the police officer approached him and racially profiled him just for sitting out in a luxurious car. And he took the case, he fought the case, he took the case to the court, and he won. And there was another case similar to Sudeh. This time it's a constitutional lawyer, one of our most respected lawyer that does human rights cases. And him, that was at the Brenton Courthouse, and he went there to go at the they have a lounge specifically for lawyers, and they discriminated against him. You know, asked him questions. They were not asking people that doesn't look like him. You know, people that are not black, right? So he sued them, and he took them to the HRTU, and he won on that case. And that case is a precedent-setting case, right? So I know, you know, I think things that should be done when those incidents happen, we have to speak up about them. You know, we have to use other legal remedies that are applicable for the situation. And we also, you know, like people in the community have to support and make statements and write letters to the people involved to seek to ask for the change. And that's exactly what happened in this case, right? There was a lot of different groups, a lot of different organizations that came together and wrote and made some noise Which is why they're doing something about the case. A lot of the time it gets swept under the rug and we never hear it. And even in this case, you asked me about the trespass. That was the officers trying to cover their tracks, trying to make it legitimate. But she didn't do anything other than being a lawyer, a black woman advocating for her client. I don't see anything in the facts showing that she did anything wrong. Yet those officers are trying to make us seem that she violated the law, So, but I mean, I think it's gonna be interesting to see what happens when they go to the courthouse, for the case. She had great lawyers, and we'll see what happens. But I mean, I think in that case, it's gonna be interesting. The truth will always come out.
I was looking at reports about this case and interviews with other lawyers, and one of them said that when a white lawyer walks into a courthouse, they're automatically assumed to be counsel, but when a black lawyer walks in, they're asked if they're being charged with a crime or tried or something. Is this a culture that you have noticed yourself as a working lawyer? You mentioned other cases that exist, like Sudie and Riley's. Obviously, this does not exist in a vacuum, but could you just talk a little bit about that culture yourself?
Oh, definitely. I can speak about my experience and I'm happy to share it. I can tell you one experience that I had the first time I argued a motion in court. Back in 2012, 2013, I was, well, 2014, I was arguing in Ottawa. And I went to the courthouse in Ottawa to do like a motion, an express motion. And those motions, students can argue with them in front of the court. And that was the first ever motion that I argued in front of the court. I went there, I won the motion. The judge, when you win a motion, the judge give you a piece of paper, then you have to go to the clerk to get it noted in the file. When I went to the clerk, the guy had to call the courthouse to make sure that it wasn't a fraudulent order. So he was actually accused me of fraud. At that time, I was only a student. I was really shocked. I didn't do anything about it. I didn't speak up. I didn't make any noise. I didn't even say anything to the lawyers at this firm I was arguing because I was the only black person there. Because I'm like, hey, is that gonna help me, to play the victim in that situation, right? Like I didn't do it. But that was one incident. There's other incident where I go and represent a client at the courthouse. They think I'm the accused, even though I'm dressed. Properly, like my opposing counsel that are different color than I am, right? And those things happen. I'm not the first one, to have issues. Like I know a lot of people, that look like me. They've been having issues in the courthouse. A lot of people make mistakes. Thinking that we're the accused and not the lawyer. And I think just speaking up about it, just helps solve, the issue and make people open their eye. And even the law society, they're the one who's supposed to protect lawyers, but they target a lot of the racialized lawyers for audits about the practice. And a lot of racialized lawyers get disciplined by law society. So I think there's things that needs to be done there too, right? To give the racialized lawyers the resources that they need to practice law properly. But in the courthouse, I think there must be some training that is done to make sure that everything is fair for everybody and all of the judges, and people that are involved, they should get anti-racist training to make sure, that black lawyers are protected. With everything that happened now, some black lawyers are not feeling safe
Of course.
in the justice system. We don't feel like we can go to the courthouse. And we feel like we could get the same treatment as this other lawyer, right? It's not safe for us. It's a really disgraceful incident, especially in 2026. It seemed like we're taking a step backward with this incident. So we would like to see change. I'm speaking out, but I'm in a privileged situation because I own my own law firm, so I'm able to speak up on those situations, more freely than a lot of other of my colleagues who work in other firms that are probably not too racialized. But still, it's still like a bad situation overall. You know, I feel really strongly about that case.
Of course.
Yeah, like, because it's something that really affects me. You know, like what happened to this lawyer, you know, should have never happened. And they should make sure that they put things for it to not to happen. And you know, like I honestly think, you know, that she should use all the remedies applicable to her.
Yeah. And we talked to, like, this case is more of an extreme example of anti-Black racism, but we were talking about microaggressions, just everyday experiences
A lot
that happen.
of microaggression. I don't know if you're following in the news, but you know, I have a lawyer at my firm, who's actually my wife. You know, her name is Lydia Latham. She has her own case going on against her previous employer, Lauren Bernardi. And her case is probably something that a lot of lawyers in the profession experience, but a lot of them are not in a position to fight against that microaggression. But this is something that everyone, if you're racialized or black, you have experienced that in the workplace. I know I have, you know, like but you know, like not everyone can speak up about it. I would say the microaggression, we'll see that more often in a Sudan situation, right? So you know, like we need to speak up a lot about it. But you know, like the thing is, if you speak up, a lot of lawyers are fearful of being blacklisted, you know, because you're doing it for your livelihood. Right, so you don't want to be put in a bad list where you're not able to advance in the profession, you know. So yeah, that's the fear of retribution that a lot of the lawyers are getting.
Are there, and lastly, are there any resources that you would like to see to address the everyday impact of anti-Black racism and racism in general that racialized lawyers experience currently?
Well, you know, I feel like talking about it, my education on anti-racist workplace, on anti-racist society, will be useful. So yeah, I think education, that's key, right? Speaking about it whenever it happened, you know, nipping it in the bud, promoting it, you know, like making sure that it's being shared widely. That's a good way. With social media, people have a lot of reach that we didn't have in the past. You know, and even with this situation, you know, like when we shared it, a lot of people, even people that are not racialized, you know, were able to understand it, and that really helps, right? You know, so yeah, we should just make sure education, you know, ongoing education on the topic. I think that's key. I think that's probably key, and people speaking out when that happened.